Hello, and welcome to the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative to record America's family history in sound. Oral histories are one of the most personal and rewarding ways to preserve family stories. The Tell Me a Story sessions are 45-minute interviews between two people with the assistance of a trained facilitator. Participants will receive a compact disc with the full interview. A copy will be archived at the Midwest Genealogy Center and, with permission, later made available to the public. And now, another story.
I'm Jim Nunley, and I have the pleasure of being the sort of MC, or at least the interrogator for this fine thing called a salute to African-American bowlers, past, present, and future. And in preparing for today, I sort of brought my dictionary along, because when I grew up, there wasn't very much in the way of internets and whatever, so the greatest source, or at least the most practical source of information for me, was the dictionary. And as a matter of fact, I just, like, sometimes in my casual moments, I would just dig in the dictionary. And I was always fascinated with there's a word for everything. As Apple says, there's an app for everything, but there's a word for everything. And one of the words that always fascinated me actually turned up on what was called the $64,000 question. Do you remember that?
I remember that.
You remember that? And this was one of real popular game show, and it got kind of into trouble because they actually were giving the contestants the answers, and it turned out to be sort of a fraud. But it was very interesting on I believe it was like on Saturday night. Is that what it was? Mm-hmm. Do you remember? Mm-hmm. And everybody would be glued to hear what was the $64,000 question. And one of the $64,000 questions for this little African-American girl who really just captured the world, I don't even remember her name, but she would have been about our age at this point, and they asked her the word to spell vicissitudes. And this word is spelled V-I-C-I-S-S-I-T-U-D-E-S, vicissitudes. And this word really means the predictable ups and downs of life. The weather is kind of like a vicissitude. The stock market is a vicissitude. Some people's personalities are vicissitudes. But anyway, the key word on this is predictable. It's going to happen to you. And of course, going from one stage to life, there are obviously a lot of vicissitudes connected with that. So as we move into our interviews today, and our first guest is going to be Miss Helen Bryan, and we're going to talk to her, and we're going to kind of use that vicissitudes, the ups and downs of life, as kind of our guiding theme. Is that okay with
you? That's fine.
All right. Now tell us kind of like, who is Helen Bryan?
Helen Bryant is a part of bowling history, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, we're going to get to that. But just who is born?
I was born in Newport, Arkansas.
All right.
Helen Smith.
All right.
I was married in 1960 to Melvin Bryant, so now I'm Helen Bryant.
Okay.
I am a real estate broker and owner of Bryant Real Estate here in Kansas City.
All right.
With 11 agents.
Oh.
And
all right, so you know about the vicissitudes of business,
don't you? I know
about
the vicissitudes. I've experienced it. Yes,
very good.
Yes.
Now let's go back to Newport, Arkansas.
Okay.
Now, what got you? Well, tell me about Newport, and then tell me what got you out of Newport to Kansas City.
Newport is a small town in northeast Arkansas.
Right.
It was a farmer's town. That's what got me out of Arkansas. I did not like the farm. So when I graduated from high school, my older sister was here. So Dad said, "Hey, if you're not going to do the farm, you gotta move on. You gotta do something better." So I left Arkansas and I came to live with my sister. And I was married in 1960. So
all right, tell me about the farming.
What was
it like?
I hated it.
You hated it.
I didn't like the work. I didn't like working outside in the sun.
Okay.
I didn't like the animals. I didn't like chickens and all that. And I remember Daddy telling me that I had to milk a cow.
Okay.
And if you've ever done that, and I said I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. And he said, well, if you can't milk the cow, you can't drink the milk.
All right.
I'm 69, and I don't drink milk.
Don't drink milk.
I don't drink it.
But, like, what, you know, you say it's repulsive to you, but, like, what, give me a typical day on the farm in Newport, Arkansas, I assume in the 40s and 50s?
It was in the 50s.
Okay.
And, yeah, 50s. It was, you get up, you go to school.
Right.
Out of school, you come home, you go to work. I mean, we had work to do. We had laundry. We had to feed the chickens or the pigs or whatever. We had chores. I mean, and they weren't easy chores.
Okay.
We worked some in the fields. We had like big gardens. They called them truck patches, which means they were huge gardens, you know. And you had to weed them. Okay. And you know, it sometimes takes you a week. By the time you finish one, you know, it started all over again.
Okay.
So it was just a constant thing like that.
Truck patches.
Truck patches is what they call them.
All right, now,
that was a huge garden.
Tell me about school. Was it segregated?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And how far away?
It was, we were bused. We had to ride the bus to school. Let me see. I would say it was about 10 miles.
10 miles.
Away. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And
with
what
the bus,
time did
there
they
was
pick
a,
you up?
7:30 in the morning.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Every day.
Every day.
Okay.
Every
and then
day.
You have to. Now, did you do the chores before you went to school, or you went after?
After school.
So, what time did you get back from school?
About 3:30.
3:30.
Mm-hmm.
Was it a good education?
We thought so. I mean,
okay.
Yeah. I mean, all of our teachers were like us.
Another
African, you know,
American.
And we felt comfortable with them.
All right. So we're going to ask you about this phrase, light, bright, and damn near white, along the way here, and we'll get into that a little bit as we go on. But now that's now you're coming to Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and how old are you?
I was 17.
And you're coming to live with your sister. So
mm-hmm.
how did that interaction or how did that kind of take place?
Of course, I had to ride the train here. That was our only source of transportation.
Did you have to ride in the back?
No.
No.
No,
okay.
Didn't have to ride in the back.
Okay, this is weird.
I've got a backseat story I'd like to tell you.
Okay, well, all right, we'll get into that back.
Okay, but no, I didn't have to ride in the back, but I had to change trains in Pleasant Hill, Missouri.
Okay.
Right.
And where?
That's a small town in Missouri.
Okay.
Okay, there was one drugstore. I had to get off the train, go across the street to the drugstore to get something to drink.
Okay.
There was one African American there.
In Pleasant Hill.
Okay. Pleasant Hill, Missouri.
All right. Now, where is Pleasant Hill?
It's on 7 Highway.
It's on 7 Highway.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, so I can tell you, it's on 7 Highway.
And then from Pleasant Hill to Kansas City?
From Pleasant Hill to Kansas City.
Was that an all day trip?
Yeah, okay. All day. All
right. I mean, are you by yourself at this
I
point?
Was by myself.
And you're how old?
I was 17. I was 17 years old.
Mm-hmm. Were you still?
By myself.
No.
No. I wasn't afraid. Daddy had already prepped me. Don't talk to anybody.
Under no circumstances.
Yeah, under no circumstances, don't talk to anybody.
Right.
And I didn't until I saw the man in the drugstore.
Okay.
And I ordered a soda, you know, an ice cream float or something. And he had to make it, so he was obviously somebody important in my sight,
okay.
You know, in that drugstore. So.
Did you pack a lunch?
Yeah. Well, I had a sandwich. Oh, yeah.
Tell me what was in that.
I can't remember. Now that I can't remember.
But it was so, you know, in the segregation days, you know, your parents always loaded you up because obviously, and I used to wonder about that, but they loaded you up. It was really preparation because public accommodations weren't there. You
right.
know, there were places you couldn't go in. So, you know, whatever it was, chicken or whatever, you know, you just loaded it up and ate it on the way.
Yeah, yeah. It was probably chicken or pork chops, you know, because we used to pack pork chops, too.
That's right.
So, yeah.
All right, now, we got you kind of from the farm, and you didn't like that, and you figure you got a pretty good education, and you boarded the bus north to Kansas City to be with your sister. Tell me who your sister is, and tell me why she was so receptive to your coming.
My sister was Willa French. She was the oldest of three girls. It was six total in our family. Three girls and three boys. She was the oldest girl. And she was like second mom. Because, you know, she made you
bossy.
Walk. Yes. Yes. She was tough. She was very tough. So when I first came here, she said, you got to go to work. It's the first thing out of her mouth. You got to go to work. And I didn't know anything. You know, I would have to be trained for anything. So she said, well, there's a toy factory. And I thought, toys, that should be fun, right? Wrong. It was a U.S. Toy, I think was the name of it. I think I made it 2 weeks. I just couldn't do it. I had allergies, and the plush from the toys, just I couldn't take it. So that didn't last very long. Mm-hmm. And I just, I can't remember what I did from there.
Okay.
I started taking courses at one of the Key Punch place downtown.
Okay.
I took classes there to try to better myself. And then I worked for a while for TWA.
Okay. And what did you do
Key
with
Punch.
TWA? That was
Key Punch
stuff. So this is the time when they're beginning to hire African-Americans.
Yeah, they were hiring mm-hmm. African-Americans.
Okay. So
yes,
Key Punch was a big thing. Right?
It was a big thing because they didn't pay that much. But it was based on your speed, and yeah. I was not very speedy.
Okay.
So that didn't last. I mean, it didn't go too well. I think I was there maybe 6 months or a year.
So this vicissitudes is kind of catching up with
it's
you.
It's catching up. and then I got married in late 60.
Okay.
So then I thought, no, I got somebody to take care of me. So I was through with the job field for a while.
All right, now, so did you attend church when you were here?
Yes.
Okay, was that a requirement
of
your sister?
Always. I mean, any African-American family, you go to church.
You got to go to church.
You got to go to church.
And which church did you go to?
I attended Morningstar. That's where I started when I first moved here.
All right.
And I was there for maybe 10 years.
Do you remember who the pastor was? Was it Eason?
Sam, but no.
No, Eason no. hadn't come yet.
He hadn't come yet.
Okay.
I can't remember. I can't remember who it was.
Okay. Did you attend regularly?
No.
No. Okay.
I mean, when I was with my sister, I did. After getting married, no.
No.
You know.
Okay. So where did you eventually end up church-wise?
Palestine.
At Palestine. All right. I know a little bit about Palestine. But anyway, let's talk a minute here before we really kind of return to your quest for bowling and whatever. So you would have come along at the time when Reverend Abel was beginning to make his rise to the top. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what year are we talking about when you joined Palestine?
Oh, wow. Well, that I can't remember.
Okay,
I can't remember that.
Okay, so somewhere in the early 70s, maybe?
Mm-hmm, maybe.
Okay, all right. So had they moved to the... I mean, where was the church at that point?
It was where it is now. So
it is right over.
Yeah,
so it could have been late early 70s, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Very good. All right. Let's go back here. And you know, as a business lady, when did you kind of move into becoming a real estate independent entrepreneur?
I got my license in 1995. And I worked for a while with Lester Dickey Real Estate, and until 2000, I started my own brokerage.
Okay, and you're pretty happy with that?
I'm very happy with it.
Was that a vicissitude kind of ending after kind of like working for people and just deciding to do it on your own? Tell me about that.
Well, Lester's wife was just fantastic. I mean, she was a great coach. And I worked the office. I worked, I don't forget what you call it, but I worked every Monday. I never left the office on Monday. And she always had stacks of paperwork for me to read every Monday, in addition to answering the phone. And it was such a great, great opportunity for me to grow because of the stuff that she provided for me.
Mm-hmm.
And, I learned so much under her. And she was not a realtor, but she was an educator, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And she taught me a lot about real estate. And I really owe this career to her. And she instilled such confidence in me about what I could do. And in 98, I reached a goal that I never dreamed I would. I sold $1 million worth of properties.
Wow.
And it was to minorities, you know. And I thought, if I can do that for Lester, you know.
You can do that for
I can do that for me. And I took the brokerage exam, which was a little tough, mm-hmm. but I was determined. And once I passed the exam, I started at home. I started in my little one-room office. And I did okay the first year. And my business got kind of really, really heavy. And I had to move into a rental property that we owned. So Now I have this little house that I call my business, and it's owned. All I pay is utilities.
All right, now. Sorry, but let's drift backwards now before we get into the 21st century here. Let's go back to the 20th century, and how did you get connected with bowling?
Okay, bowling in 1968, Mary Pickens and I, we were both housewives, was at the grocery store on Blue Parkway. I think it was Kroger or something there. And we read in a paper, a little paper, that there were free bowling classes at the plaza.
Okay.
Knowing that we probably wasn't expected to be there.
All right.
We decided we would go, daringly. And we went. We both had a child, but one child each. And we went there and told them we were there for the classes. And they welcomed us. We went through it. We were there every Monday at 1 o'clock. So we learned to bowl. And I loved it. I mean, the game was just great. So they put us in a league.
What did you like about it?
I liked it because it was different. It's something I'd never done before.
Okay.
And was exercise.
And they didn't have that in Newport.
And they didn't. We didn't. No, we didn't have it in Newport.
Okay.
And but it was just so enjoyable. And then we saw the kids bowling. They had a group of little kids that bowled. And I'm thinking, my child can do that too, right? Okay. Well, they had youth leagues, but they didn't. Nobody wanted to coach my child.
Okay.
So that started my career in bowling. I decided I would coach him myself.
Oh.
So.
Now, this word coach keeps kind of emerging in our conversation. You talked about, was it Miss Dickey?
Dickey.
Lester
Dickey's.
And then this lady who coached you.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you're kind of looking for a coach for your son. And so this thing, coaching, has that a lost art? Is it gone away? I mean...
Well, I hope not.
Okay.
I truly hope not.
They call it mentoring kind of today.
Now it's mentoring.
Yeah.
But then it was coaching,
it was
because
coaching.
You inspired them.
That's
and, you know, you encouraged them. You just kind of let them alone.
Yeah.
And I found it very, very entertaining. So when I start coaching my child, I was offered a position as a coach for other children.
Oh.
At the Plaza Bowl.
Again, a little entrepreneurism there. Okay.
But having small children, I said, I'll only do it part-time.
Okay.
I have to be with my children.
All right.
When school's out, I have to be home. So I worked from like 10 to 2.
Okay.
And or coordinating things. And I would organize leagues of those, you know, the children.
Mm-hmm.
And I just enjoyed working. I enjoyed working with them and working with people.
I see. So how were you able to crack through that Plaza Bowl thing? I
met a man named Alex George.
Okay.
And Alex was my backbone. He was always there for me. He gave me anything, everything I needed, whatever I needed to make it happen, he was there for me.
Okay.
And my youth league just grew. I mean, I started first with my kids and my neighbors, and I ended up with one of the largest youth bowling programs in the state of Missouri.
So you were proving yourself
I had proven myself. And... it just grew from there. I think we had 3 squads on Saturday. It was 32 lanes, and we had 2 full squads, 9 and 1, and we had 18 team league at 3.
All right, so these are all kids.
These are all kids, okay. And they range in age from 5 to 18.
All right, and so are these basically black kids or white kids or both?
They were both.
Okay.
Alex assisted me in contacting the Kansas City, Missouri School District to organize after school leagues.
Okay.
The first one started with Sweeney, Bryant, Border Star,
kind of white schools, essentially.
White schools.
Mm-hmm.
I ventured east of Truce, and
right,
I invited Francis Willard.
Yeah, okay.
You know, they were kind of tough.
Right.
Francis Willard, Pershing, Chick, Emmanuel Lutheran. We just kind of spread out all over the city.
Mm-hmm.
But we couldn't go too far because of the busing time, the time it would take them to get, you know, back and forth. And they could only come after school.
So what year are we talking about?
We're talking about 70 to the flood. And I think the flood was in 78. I'm
okay.
Not sure.
All right.
But we bused the kids over there, and I mean, we had a full house.
Yeah.
It was a full house every Monday through Friday.
Was it organized?
I mean, very organized.
Okay, I mean, they always say when you get a lot of kids.
Very organized, and we had adult supervision, volunteer adult supervision. Right. Most of them were minorities.
Right.
Adult bowlers, you know, some of the adult bowlers would come and help. We had, Tommy Johnson was one of our coaches. Tommy Johnson, Will Watson. They both worked with, Tommy worked at VA hospital.
All right.
He made an excellent coach. He was a big teddy bear. And Will Watson worked for General Motors. So they were on shifts where they could help during the day. So that was a big help to me. But I was crying out for help because I was overloaded with children, and I could, you know, you can only do so much.
So you were successful and you needed help.
And I needed help.
Okay.
I needed help.
All right, now, so you're getting this management ability, you know, to be able to organize and whatever. I mean, who started discovering that? I mean, you were trying to work for somebody early, and, you know, you certainly failed at the farm thing and whatever, and then, but you got this kind of spirit to organize and manage. How did that kind of, when did you know that you had this something special?
Well, I would say maybe in 75, maybe.
And is this coming through the bowling thing?
Coming through the bowling. It was always bowling from there. I mean, when I started bowling, I just kind of stayed there until my current career. I went from youth coordinator or youth director to adult.
Are you getting paid for this?
Of course.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, no volunteer anymore.
Is it better than key punching?
It was better than key punching, yes.
I mean,
because
money
I was with people, and I just love to be with people.
Okay.
You know, and I could I could do more for my people, I felt.
Right.
You know, if I'm there, I can request what I think we need.
Okay.
You know. And when I moved into management, or from the adult coordination, from adult coordinator, I moved into, I think, a couple of years of management at King Louis East.
Okay, we're going to get that in a minute.
Okay, so, but until that, it was just fun. It was fun, something fun to do.
Now this, I mentioned earlier about this whole notion of light, bright, and damn near white. And the reason I'm so graphic with that, because it's such a part of our culture that we don't usually talk about. And I experienced it firsthand because I was the 17th African-American to go to University of Missouri. And I looked around at all of us, and all of us were light-complected. Mm. And one of the kids astutely said, they're going to let the light-skinned ones in first, and then there'll be others. Tell me about how this might have affected you. I mean, you're obviously light-complected. You got a lot on the ball. Did it help you? Did it hurt you? I mean, to what extent was this a factor in your life?
You know, I never really thought about it. But I'm sure that a lot of the opportunities that I received were because of my complexion.
Good.
I think. I'm almost sure it was. Even with the other bowling centers, because we traveled.
Yeah, because you're traveling at this point.
Yes.
Yeah.
We had a traveling league, and we traveled as far as Liberty.
Okay.
And that was when I really realized, and my team was mixed. We had black and white on my team. It's when I really realized, the lady kept saying, well, where is your instructor? I am the instructor, you know? And then
you're the great I am.
Okay. And we were good. I mean, my team was really good, so we were the team to beat. And but she just couldn't believe that I was the instructor. So after a while, it just kind of felt like, who cares? You know, I am me. I'm who I am. And the kids loved me, and they didn't care. You know, but I think most of the adults thought, well, she's here just because she is light complected. You know. But
that didn't bother you.
Didn't bother me, no. Okay. Oh, no.
But you knew you had a little edge.
I didn't feel that edge, but I'm sure it was there.
Okay.
I tried not to.
All right. But you're deep enough and introspective enough to know that you also got something else to back it up, right?
Yes.
All right. So that's the part I want to kind of get to, is that part. I mean, how did it feel to kind of like feel like you're kind of in the groundbreaking areas? You're in pace-setting territory. You're in doing the first kind of thing, and we're going to relate that to King Louis East. But just tell me what's going on in your mind as far as this feeling of knowing I'm doing something different, I'm doing something first, I'm doing something with white kids, and et cetera. Tell me about that. Just the feeling, not the facts. Just
the feeling that, okay, I was black, and I was bowling on the plaza in leagues that I know they didn't want me to bowl in, but I was capable. I was able to do it. I could bowl just as good as they could, and I would show it. I mean, I was proud of what I could do because I was good.
All right.
And I was not afraid to show that. And the manager at that time was Sid Sander, who realized it. He was Jewish, so race was no thing for him. But I'm sure he saw that, and he pushed me into things that he knew that they didn't want me in.
I hear you.
He put me in leagues that he put me in positions, secretary and president and of these leagues, and they didn't want me there.
I hear you.
But I wasn't about to go anyplace.
That's right.
So I was a little stubborn there, and I thought, well, if you put me there, I'm going to stay, and I'm going to be the best at it.
All right. So you've come a long way from Newport,
Arkansas. Oh, yes.
Right? Do you ever go back?
Occasionally.
Occasionally. Mm-hmm. Is the you in Kansas City or the you in Newport that's most dominant in your mind?
The me in Newport.
There you go. So you still have those tough values that come out of
this. Yes.
All right, and who did you favor the most, your mother or your
father? My father.
Father? Are you slightly afraid of him?
Nope.
Nope, but what did he instill in you before we get to this management of King Lee's? What did he instill in you? What's the driving force?
You can do whatever you want to do.
He told you that? Mm-hmm. Did he tell you that every day?
Nope.
Did he tell you that every week?
No, so just occasionally. Occasionally he would say, if I said, I can't do, yes, you can. You can do anything you want to do, anything you set your mind to.
All right.
And he was just always believed in that.
Is he still alive?
No, he isn't.
Okay. And what did people say at his funeral that made you kind of connect with him? I mean, what do you remember about that?
That he was friendly. He was always helpful to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was like, what he had, he shared with everybody.
Right. So he lives in you.
Huh?
So he lives in you.
Very much so.
Well, in the day when we sort of malign black fathers, I mean, it's just interesting and touching that you would have such an affinity. Okay, so we're moving up the line. When did you become manager of King Louis? And this is another groundbreaking. This is another first. What's it like?
When I became manager of King Louis East.
What year are we talking about?
85.
85. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're top person.
Well, yes, okay. I was top. But I followed a great black person, too, as being manager. Okay. So as manager, I was there. I think King Louis was... it was still King Louis at that point. King Louis, it was still King Louis operated. But later sold to AMF. So when AMF took over, I was there. I remember traveling with them to Stone Mountain, Georgia.
All right. Right outside of Atlanta.
I was the only black one on the bus.
Wow.
And one of the managers, a manager from King Louis Northland, made a statement about white sheets.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Did you check it?
Mm-hmm.
So tell me how you check
it. I asked how many white sheets was on that bus. Because I felt that if he would say something like that, then he could relate to what was happening outside there. And I just felt that it was time for me to really stand up and let them know who I really was.
Right.
And I tried to do that as intelligently as I could.
Okay.
To let them know that the white sheets didn't scare me.
All right.
If you got to hide behind that sheet, I don't fear you.
All right. That is one of the real tragedies of life, and one of the things that we're really trying to accomplish here is that the part of history that's about to be lost with us is our feelings toward the Caucasian people mm-hmm. that we saw as kind of the enemy or the people who had their feet on our neck or the people that was stopping us from becoming who we needed to be, and most importantly, those people who were in our way to experience the American dream. And so when I draw these things out, I'm trying to capture that in you because you're so articulate, but those kind of things that need to be said along a part of history as well. Mm-hmm. And they're pushing the time limit here. Let's start drawing this together. I mean, I'm fascinated by your story. But let's ask the obvious question here about being black and being female and being in bowling. I mean, what, were you a good bowler?
I was a good bowler.
Okay.
Think so.
Okay. Okay.
When I quit bowling, my average was 182.
Okay. And so you were consistent.
I was consistent.
Okay, very good. But like, so you're a good organizer, you're a good bowler, and what about the men? Did the men accept you? I mean, at that time, we're pretty sexist in our life at that point.
I wasn't that good. I mean, there were some women that was much better that bowled with the men. Liz and...
Liz. Is that Liz Trice?
Liz Trice. Okay. Liz Trice. Kathy Gibbs. They were much better bowlers.
Okay.
And they competed with the men. I didn't really compete that much with the men. I mean, I bowled in some of the leagues, the greater, you know, the best leagues, but... not like they did.
What's your contribution to all this? What do you think your contribution is? I mean, why are you here? I've talked to scores of people and as I get into this, and being not from Kansas City, or at least being a recent bowler, you know, I just sort of stumbled in this, but I'm getting more and more fascinated. But everybody has kind of a unique part or a unique story to tell. What's yours?
Mine is, I introduced a lot of black bowlers, black youth, to the art of bowling.
All right.
And that's what I'm most proud of.
All right.
All of the children that bust to the plaza, I'm proud of them. All right. Because they may have never known bowling had it not been for those after-school leagues.
Do you run into them?
Yes.
And
yes.
What did they say to you?
They just tell me about the good old days, things that happened, what happened at the, there was a dime store next door, Woolworth.
All right.
They'd go over there and steal stuff. And they wouldn't tell me because they knew I'd make them take it back.
Right.
I get Facebook. I've got a lot of them that's contacted me on Facebook.
Are you tough?
I used to be.
All right. You say used to be tough.
I used to be a little tough.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just want to stand up for what's right.
That's right. Yeah. And regardless of your color. If you're wrong, you're wrong.
Were you a good example?
Yes.
Okay. And tell me how you were a good example.
I treat people the way I want to be treated.
Okay.
And I still do. I want to be the resource for your needs,
okay,
for people's needs.
Right.
I want to be, if I can't help you, I want to have resources for you.
Very good.
That I can, if I can't do it, I can send. I know where to send you.
That's right.
And I do that quite often.
And we're going to get back a little bit to your business here, but it's the hardest concept to teach youngsters or to share with youngsters is the part that we give to connect, or we connect to give. You know, we share, and in that sharing, there are so many blessings that come as a result of that. I wish we could put that in a book, and they talk about strategic plans today, and they talk about concepts and paradigm shifts, and it really just boils down to sharing with others sincerely as you have done over the years. You know, like if you share with kids, obviously the blessings come hundreds of times because somebody knows who you are and they know what you've done, and therefore they tell others and it helps you in business. Is that accurate?
Yes.
It is?
Yes.
And how do we get that over to the present day? I mean, the school district is kind of waging a war, or at least always in trouble. And I always just want to say, you know, like, maybe it's just about the disconnect and people aren't really connected. Do you find that to be
yes.
true?
And we got to work the parent. We have got to work with the parent. I mean, and I think it's just going to take the older adults to really kind of get hold, you know, take hold and work with the parent. And it's not just the children, of course, they have issues, but it's the parent. I think we just have to start with the parent. And how to get through them, I haven't haven't found that out yet. But, I mean, I work with children even today, you know, the kids on my block. If we have to take one block at a time, we can do that, I think.
I'm fascinated by this interview, and I'd be remiss if I didn't go back to where we started. We talked about the words of the vicissitudes, the ups and downs of life. You told me a lot about your ups. Tell me a little bit about maybe the downside of your life. What discouraged you? What got in your way? Or what did you have to overcome? Or just wherever you want to go with the downside, and then we'll wrap this up.
The downside was as manager, and seeing how the corporation differentiated in the bowling centers that they owned. Being the manager of the only black bowling center that AMF owned, I could see how they provided, less service to us. And that was one of the things that really hurt me, because I felt that we had a full center, we had a full house of bowlers, and I felt that we were entitled to the same equipment, the same services that the other centers received, and we did not get that. I recall asking or requesting for machinery that we needed for tournaments or what have you, and we were given used equipment from one of the other centers.
Hello.
And it just really aggravated me to find that out. And I wouldn't have known. I mean, I never go back and see what's going on back there. But the mechanic told me, he said, "Oh, yeah, we've got different machinery, but it was used."
Oh,
and that was one of my down times. And when I went to them and reported this, I mean, I wasn't going to sit back quietly and not just let it pass over. I went and talked to them about it, the upper management, and I was told that it was good enough for us.
Oh, my goodness. How did that statement come across exactly? Good enough for us.
It would serve the purpose.
Okay.
It would, like, you know, it would take care of your problem. Mm-hmm. It would solve the problem that you have.
Right.
In other words, it's not new, but it's good enough for you.
Good.
And that's the way I took it. And that was when I resigned as manager of King Lee East.
Right at the moment or within a
couple of weeks? A couple of weeks later. I let them think about it. But I told them that I was going to resign. I said, this will be the end of my career here. Right. Because if I can't fight for what I know our bowlers needed, I mean, they needed that stuff, you know? And we had some excellent bowlers. We had one of the best men's leagues as far as I'm concerned, in the state of Missouri, bowling on Sundays. And I wanted the best equipment.
Who was on that team?
Twin City Classic.
Okay.
That was tough. That was the best league.
All right. Who were some of the bowlers?
Some of the bowlers were Ron Winfrey.
We know that name.
You know that name. Joe Newsom. Robert Hillman. Clarence Moten. Oh, I could go on and on. But Quintus Jameson was their organizer, I would say.
Okay.
And I had to please them. I felt that if I couldn't please that group, you know, I didn't need to be there. And fighting management for what they needed, I thought, I'll go down fighting.
So you're a competitor, too.
Very.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right. Any final words you want to say this that's important to say? And let me set the scene for you. Okay, on next Saturday, October the 29th, at 4:30 p.m., we're going to gather at the Bruce Watkins Center. And there we're going to honor bowlers of the past. We're going to try to identify those who have gone on before and made a contribution to bowling, maybe unsung or maybe recognized, but either way. And there's going to be one segment where we would talk to each of you that have been interviewed through this process. And we're going to ask you to say one line or one statement or one paragraph about what you know about the history of black bowlers in the Kansas City area. What has been your contribution? Anything you want to say. But I want to ask you today, what do you think you'll say when we ask you that question?
I would say that I am happy to be a part of bowling in Kansas City. Very, very pleased.
Because
of the great people that I've met and the great bowlers that have come from my help, my assistance.
So this ceremony is long overdue. Is that what you're saying?
Very much so, yes.
Bring as many people as you can. We'll welcome them, okay?
I will.
It has been a pleasure.
Thank you.
It has been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.